Good afternoon. I suspect we're sort of at the east end of, or the west end of the convention center, and I think there'll be people coming in, but we're going to start on time. So welcome. This is workshop number 229, Military Ministry Serving Wholeness in Congregations and Beyond. And we welcome you to our workshop. I want to tell you who is in the room here, up here. I'm going to start by introducing myself, and then I'm going to go down there and move slides because we have a clicker that's not being happy with us today. So I'm Gail Forsyth Vail. I'm the Adult Programs Director in the Ministries and Faith Development Department, and it was my job to take materials that had been developed originally by Shannon Holland, and I worked with Monica Cummings, and the three of us worked on publishing the Military Ministry Toolkit, which you'll hear more about today. So I'm going to let, pass it down, let you introduce yourselves. And I'm going to scoot down there.
Hello, my name is Lisa Presley. I serve as a Congregational Life Consultant on the UUA staff for the Mid-America region, and I also chair the UUA's Committee on Military Ministry. You will hear more about that later.
Hi, everyone. I'm Bob LaValle. I'm a intern minister at the Church of the Larger Fellowship, where I do military ministry and worship, among other things. I'm also delighted to see that we've dimmed the lights and it's after lunch, so everyone should have a really nice, soothing... Thank you very much for coming. I'll talk more about my experiences later on.
Well, Bob stole my joke about the afternoon snooze. I'm Brett Lorty. I'm the senior minister of the Unitarian Church of Evanston. I'm also serve for the Unitarian Universalist Association on the Military Ministry Committee, and I'm a Civil Air Patrol chaplain, so I have three kind of hats that I'm wearing this afternoon. All right.
Every time we gather to talk about military issues at General Assembly, and many of us in all the other settings we do, we begin with a roll call to honor those who currently serve, who have served, and those who have lost their lives in service to our country or to any other country. And as you hear a description that fits you, I invite you to stand or raise your hand so we can notice who you are. And please remain standing or with your hand up until the end, and please do not applaud. All those serving in active duty in the military. All those serving in guard and reserve and auxiliaries. All those who have served in the military. All those who have served in the Guard, Reserve, and Auxiliaries. All those who have served in the Alternative Service. All those who currently have family serving on active duty. All those who currently have family serving in the Guard, Reserve, or Auxiliaries. All those who have had family serving on active duty. All those who have had family serving in the Guard, Reserve, or Auxiliaries. All those who have or have had family serving in the Alternative Service. Let us now enter into a moment of silence to honor all of those who are standing, all those we hold in our hearts, and the loved ones we bring with us into this space. Thanksgiving for all you have given and for all those you love have given. Please be seated. I'm sorry.
So you're going to hear a little bit more later in the presentation about actually implementing the military ministry toolkit in your congregations. But we wanted to start out by giving you a taste of what it was like, a little bit of the conversational work that we did in our workshop and that is in the toolkit. So it's not going to be that long. We're going to divide into threes. And this is an opportunity for everyone in the back row to start in populating these front tables, because it's a pretty big room. So look around you, pick two other people that you want to do this with. There's some space down here in the front, but not definitely not two or four, but try to go for that three. Okay. Each speaker in your group, we're going to go through two rounds of active listening, which means just listening to the person without feedback and just be, you know, a good listener. We're going to go, each person is going to have 2 minutes to speak on round one about these two questions, and I'll give you the second question when we go to round two. Who in your family served in the military? And what was the undercurrent in your family about this? And when I say serve in the military, active, guard, reserve, or alternative service, conscientious objection, anything, you know, how did your family of origin interact culturally with the military? And so, first speaker, start speaking, and I'll give a 2-minute warning so that you don't have to keep time. All right, speaker number two of three, it's your time.
So,
If you're just coming in, if you come down to the front, I'll brief you on what's going on. If you're just coming in the room, I'll come on down. If you're just coming in the room, if you'd come down to the front, we've got some small groups going, and I'll let you know what's going on. All right, the third speaker now can talk. Okay, so as you can tell, that it gets you going pretty quickly in the conversation. So we're going to go to round two, and again, we're going to have 2 minutes for each speaker. And this is, what messages about military service did you receive early in your life? What messages did you receive from your school and your community? So we just talked for a few minutes about our family, our inner, you know, our home life a little bit. This is what were the external to the house, school, community, even church. What were those external messages that you got about military service? And first speaker, you're on. Okay, we're moving to speaker number two in this second round. If you're just coming in, just hang tight. We're going to be done with this section in about 4 minutes. So just, and if you'd come down front, you can actually see the slides better. So speaker two.
Thank you.
All right, third person in your triad, is your turn now to speak. All right, so that actually wraps up our small group portion. This was right out of the toolkit itself. And it's a little out of order in maybe a more natural progression for this workshop, because it really fits in well with what I'm going to talk later about, an actual implementation of the toolkit, the military ministry toolkit. But we decided to put it early in the workshop just to show you what happens when you get people to start talking about this thing that we often don't talk about, is how military service and military issues have intersected our lives and then what to do with them. And I don't know if you, I was up here watching and there's just a buzz in the room. Everyone immediately engaged, and that's the kind of experience that I had in my congregation when we did this work. And let the introverts in the room know that was it. No more small group work. yay. Yeah, don't you love workshops where the first thing they do is say, turn to the person next to you and tell them your life. But thank you for engaging in that, and I'm going to turn it over to Lisa.
So one of the questions that often gets asked in people's mind, if not out loud, is why are we bothering anyway with the military, with doing this? And let me just tell you a story of our more recent engagement with issues around the military. In the early to mid-1990s, I served one of our congregations just north of Detroit. And as part of my service to that congregation, as I said to the board and members, the way we paid taxes in the community was that I also served as a voluntary police chaplain. And that came about, I was told to do so by my secretary because she had been held up in the church just mere months before I got there, and she was so impressed by how our police had handled the matter that she, when the chief sent out a notice saying, you know, come to a luncheon to find out about this, she told me I had to go. So you did not mess with Anne. And so I had been doing this work. I was a police chaplain for about a decade. And along through this, I was at a national fundraising dinner in Washington, D.C., and ran into Cynthia Kane. Cynthia Kane, at the time, was our only active duty chaplain in the military, Navy chaplain. And she and I had actually gone to school together. So we knew each other, and it was just sort of, what are you doing here? And as we renewed our friendship, we began talking about the strange place we felt with our service, her to the military and me to the police, that there were a lot of similarities and tensions in it. That by our theological approach, well, both military and police chaplains are supposed to be there with the person with their own beliefs and not to impose beliefs upon them. And so we both felt that within our Unitarian Universalist background, we were ideally suited to do that kind of work. There might be others who do it very well as well, but there's something about our theological stance where we could be with people where they were without violating anything about us. And yet at that time, this is again the mid-1990s, there was great tension both internally within Unitarian Universalism and also externally in the agencies in which we served. Internally, those who served police and military were seen as traitors, were seen as consorting with the enemy. I was told that by my colleagues, and other such things, and no one could really understand why we did that work or why it might be important. And within our institutions, we also had a hard time because we were more liberal than anyone else, and so we were suspect there. And so this whole tension of feeling called to serve these populations who serve us and make our lives possible and protect our freedoms, although, yes, we know there are always some kinds of excess, to serve that population who protects us felt like our calling, and yet we were under attack and challenge by our own faith community. I ended up doing my Doctor of Ministry program on UU attitudes toward military and police, and found that in the surveys I did, everybody said, oh, I'm fine with it, but no one in my congregation would be. And out of that work, though, what I learned from Cynthia was that we as an institution had no structure to support our military chaplains. There were many within the Unitarian Universalist Association hierarchy and in the Department of Ministry who were supportive of the work, but there was no structure to support and hold the chaplains while they did that work. And so that was another part of my DMIN project, where I helped create with a team of other people who were in the military the policies and procedures and structures that we now have to support the military. At that point, as I said, Cynthia was the only active duty service member, military chaplain we had. Now I believe we are up to 16, although that number keeps on growing every time I turn around. So that's sort of a background, but for me, this question of why should we bother, that it really came to this point of serving those who serve us. Part of my ministry has always been to be a servant leader, to serve those who lead. And for military and police chaplains, they are the ones who hold us, who make possible the freedoms for many of us. Yes, there are things and abuses that need to be addressed, but the individuals themselves can be supported even as we challenge some of the policies. 95% of my police chaplains went into policing for the exact same reason I went into the ministry, which is to make the world a better place, to make it a safer place for all of us. And so for me, it's important that our congregations do this work and that we welcome into our midst military members, because they are the ones who are holding that line for us. They hold the space for our democracy and even for the failures in that democracy, but also mostly for the hope and possibility that lies in it. And for our congregations not to be willing to accept that says that we have decided that there are some people who are beyond the need of our saving message.
Well, it's hard to add much to that. I'm Bob LaValle. I'm an interim minister at the Church of the Larger Fellowship, where I do military ministry and worship. I'm also a Marine Corps vet, Army National Guard, Cavalry Scout, and I spent a year in Afghanistan as a civilian contractor. Thanks for the shout there. So we're a country at war. We've been at war for almost 15 years now. 2.6 million people have passed through Afghanistan or Iraq as part of the wars. So this is our lived reality right now. And I know we're a self-selected audience because we all chose to walk into the room, but when we did the roll call, everybody stood up, virtually everybody stood up. So this is what's happening in our congregations or in our communities. And if we're gonna have a truly thoughtful, a meaningful, nuanced conversation about militarism or empire, we have to first have this conversation about our shared experiences within our congregations about serving in the military and what that meant, so we can get past the stereotypes and get to the real talk. So it's a great thing for us to do. And I'll stop there.
So why engage in this in your congregations? I'm going to say because it's the tough conversation that starts more conversations. I'm going to go through a little bit later exactly the process that my church, the Unitarian Church of Evanston, went through. But we have a very active in my congregation peace and justice team. And they are they describe themselves as peace activists. And they are doing amazing work. And what happened when some of that team started actually kind of responding to something that I put a little tiny thing in a sermon, a little seed one time, about this toolkit. And I said, well, this is one thing we could do. I think it was a Veterans Day service that here's one thing that we could do to engage in this conversation. And it started many critical and difficult conversations within the peace and justice team, between me and people in the congregation. And it was tough. Even within the work, even when we were doing the workshops, I had three people who were just really agitated and energized in a good way, in a way they hadn't been, out in the hallway saying, why are we doing this? Exactly this question. Why are we doing this and not something else? Why aren't we talking about gender? Why aren't we talking about race? Why aren't we talking about other welcoming things? Why are we talking about this? I said, because this is the tough conversation that we've never had. And isn't it amazing that we could have it? And part B to that question was, and let's have those conversations about those other things. And guess what? This conversation led to conversations about race, economics, class, that people were hungry for. It was actually a catalyst for, because when we start talking about military in our country and what it means to be a nation at war and who's in the ranks, it opens up all sorts of things around class and economics and race. And so it pulls in those other conversations that we're having as a movement and as churches. So.
Just briefly say that I became a Unitarian Universalist back in 1971 in the middle of Vietnam, at a time when Unitarian Universalism was very much anti-war. And I had the occasion when the Military Ministry Toolkit, which I'm going to tell you about in a minute, came into my lap as a developmental editor to work with. This was the occasion for me to kind of marry the faith that I love with the fact that my dad is a vet, and I grew up with, I'd always made it a practice to go to the Veterans Day and the Memorial Day observances and all of that, and it's not something I ever talked about. And I served congregations as a religious educator, and so the opportunity to work on the toolkit for me allowed some space for something that I had not had before in a faith community. So I want to tell you a little bit about the Military Ministry Toolkit. This arose as a project done by Shannon Holland, who had the same position that Bob LaValle now holds as an intern with the Church of the Larger Fellowship. And it was called Bridge Builders initially. Did anybody work with it when it was called Bridge Builders? Does that ring a bell with anyone here? Okay. And so it went from CLF to the UUA staff to develop it, publish it online as part of our online materials. So I think if we just kind of look at a piece of it, which is a video, and this is Cynthia Kane, who was mentioned earlier. The volume's on the speakers. On the speakers themselves. That is a small clip of a video that's part of the Military Ministry Toolkit and available online. Brett is in the video, so is Lisa. You're not in the video because I made that earlier. But it's part of what's available to you, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute. So what is the Military Ministry Toolkit? I think if we just probably go forward.
This now works.
Oh, yay. Okay, I just went backwards. Okay, so what's in the Military Ministry Toolkit? It's a PDF. It's about, it's actually 53 pages long. I have this little printout of it here. You can find it online. You can search in Military Ministry Toolkit on the UUA.org, and you can find it. And what's in it are six workshops. You had a little bit of a taste of one of them. Here are the workshops. We deliberately decided to hold the ethical questions about war and peace until session three for good teaching reasons. That the really most important thing is that people begin their personal stories before they get into their heads about ethical questions. So it begins with your personal stories, your family stories, a little bit of a really an inventory of your congregation's approach to the military. What do the posters look like? What do the announcements look like? How do you handle it when there's a memorial service for a vet? All of that. What are the messages in your congregation on Veterans Day or Memorial Day or other times? So there's sort of a taking stock of the messages, and sometimes those messages are conflicting. So you look at your congregation, and then you look at philosophical and ethical questions about war and peace, and that includes some personal storytelling about perhaps family members that might have been involved in peace movements or other things that impact this. So again, it's an emphasis on storytelling. And then the fourth workshop looks at the impact on families, both spouses and parents, as well as children. And then the last two workshops are really, one is about designing a worship service for the congregation, and then the last one is a next steps, which is basically, what are we going to do about this now? What are our next steps? So I would say that the program is really the first four, and then workshops five and six invite the rest of the congregation in on the journey. And the video is 23 minutes long. The purpose of the video is to actually introduce, it's a way to introduce the topic to congregational leadership. It's also on UUA.org. So it basically has a variety of different people reflecting on the question. The one question I gave them is, why should Unitarian Universalist congregations be involved in military ministry? And lots of people answer that question differently. Almost every one of them told a story, and so the video has a whole lot of different voices of people responding to that. The idea is you might use that. It could be used, I think, in a, say, a summer service or a lower attendance service where you could actually use that 23-minute video as a centerpiece. But when we did it, what we had in mind is this is actually a piece to get the conversation going, something you could bring to your leadership to get them talking. So that's there for you, along with, as I said, the workshop plans. Okay. So I'm going to turn this over to Brett, who's going to talk about what happened in his congregation with the kit. And I should also say, before he begins, that like all of our faith development materials, it is adaptable for your context, and we want you to do that. And it's online, which is... yeah, one of the beauties of online materials is that they're adaptable. So Brett did some adapting, which we're really happy about. Yeah.
So I planted a seed one Veterans Day, and I was new at the congregation. They all know that I serve a Civil Air Patrol squadron and that I'm very active in that work. And so they were really curious, of course, and about how I would approach this, and maybe a little bit apprehensive, like how is he going to push us? Are we going to become a... and so let me go through a case study of the Unitarian Church of Evanston and show you how we got from planting a seed in a sermon to actually doing the toolkit and some of the successes that we had and some of the questions that we had. The Unitarian Church of Evanston is an interesting congregation. As I just said earlier, it's got a long, rich history of peace activism and anti-war work. Very, very strong feelings around resistance to military action. We also have a weekly religious service that we put on up at the Great Lakes Naval Air Station, or Naval Station. And so we have a very active military outreach program. But I noticed right away when I got there that they were separate. Like, one never touched the other. Those people were doing that, these people were doing that. And one of the goals I had was to reconcile all of this feeling and all of these passions so that we start understanding, well, why are we doing that? How does that up at the Naval Station, you can tell I'm a pilot, I keep putting air in there, right? Up at the Naval Station with the peace work that we're so invested in. So I just planted a seed. I was talking about Veterans Day, blah, blah, you know, good stuff. And, oh, by the way, the UUA has this program that we could do if we wanted to, call the Military Ministry Toolkit. But I'll leave that to you. And guess what? Someone picked up the seed and ran with it and started talking. So I started working. The Peace and Justice team came to me and they said, okay, we're going to take up this challenge. Help us out with this. And so I started listening to them, talking to them. We looked at the materials. Some of it just wouldn't work with our congregation. For example, the 6 45-minute sessions, we decided right away we are not going to get people here for 6 weeks to do this work. So we adapted things into a three 90-minute workshop format. We cut out the videos. We cut out some of that work. We said, watch the videos ahead of time. I was working with, and this is really important, so I was the minister on the team. And then I had a former Navy captain in the congregation with a lot of credibility, just a beloved member of the church, and he was my partner. And I thought that was really important to get both lay involvement and ministerial involvement. So the first night we did messages that you receive in your family, in your community. And the congregational, the next step in that conversation would be, how does our congregation handle military issues? What is our history with the military? On the second night, we explored ethical questions, and we combined that with race and class and peacemaking. And then the third night, we did the impacts of wars on family and next steps. And one thing we took out of the workshop format was the worship planning and the worship service. We didn't call them sessions, mainly because we got the first night 60 people at the workshop. And so obviously planning a worship service with 60 people wasn't going to work. And so the Peace and Justice team and me, we kind of handpicked some of the stories that we heard lifted up in the workshop to lift up in worship. So I was really invested in calling it the Military Ministry Toolkit. I just love that name. My Peace and Justice folks said, no, we don't like it. I'm like, why don't you like it? I don't know, we don't like it. Okay, what do you want? And they came up with a name called the Peace and Reconciling War and Peace Workshop. And you'll see the poster in a minute, or maybe we can see the poster now.
You have the clicker.
Oh, I've got the clicker, that's right. Okay. They came up with this, and you know something? They were right. This title resonated with the congregation and got people involved that might not have. If it had the word military, my approach was like, they can get over that name. But you know something? Sometimes you got to meet people where they are. And everyone knew that it was going to be about military issues, but the fact that it said reconciling war and peace in the title really resonated. So this... this slide says, I want to read them because you probably can't. Let me back up. This slide says, you may hate the war, but can you welcome the warrior? And this appeared in our lobby one Sunday. before the workshop. People started talking. Next Sunday, another one. This says they fought a war against religious fanatics. Maybe they'd make good UCE members. Provocative. Third slide, third poster said, at UCE, we welcome every color of the rainbow, except perhaps camouflage. And that got probably the most attention of all. Let me jump ahead here. And so I engaged the right people in this conversation by talking to my peace and justice team. I got a good partner in this. And the results were, frankly, beyond anything I could have thought of. When we started sharing the stories, one thing that you would have done in your groups is each group would start to share some of the stories. I had combat vets who said they could never have, you know, outed themselves in the congregation. And I'm using that term intentionally because that was how big it felt for them. Like, I fought in combat and I've never felt safe in my congregation to be that, to share that. I had a conscientious objector who every Veterans Day, wondered where he fit into this equation. He shared his story of service. He was in the Army as a conscientious objector and did service. And all these years, he's been trying to reconcile that experience with his peace values. So everyone had a story. We had military brats who were, told of their life being drugged from base to base to base, and now they're at a Unitarian church, and now they're figuring out what that means. And so lots of listening was happening, and it was very good. We had four goals, and please, one of my timers, just throw something at me if I'm going over time. Okay, so jab me in the side. We identified veterans in our congregation. Oh, one thing we did is we had a woman who loves to record stories, and she sat down with vets, recorded their stories, and then wrote them up and put them into a book. And that was a resource that people that kind of lived beyond the workshop. She did it many years ago, and she did it again for this workshop. The congregation got to understand how to properly honor service members and vets, and I want to throw that out there. I was walking to the plenary this morning in my uniform, and on the street I got thanked for my service three times by people in Portland, just on the street. And I've heard from combat, I'm not a combat vet, but I've heard from combat vets say, wait, what am I being thanked for? I sustained some moral injuries in my experience, and I don't know what that means. And so the congregation as a whole, as we shared the toolkit results in a worship service, learned from our combat vets that saying thank you for your service isn't always appreciated. There are other ways of expressing that gratitude for somebody's service. And that was something that was kind of an aha moment for the congregation. Okay. Those are our goals. One thing that I wanted to say is through this process, we learned how to be more welcoming to service members and vets. And, we got to know our community, both inside the congregation and outside, as we talked about our community and some of the resources and some of the work that people were already doing. This is something I didn't even know, but somebody says, oh, yeah, I volunteered down at the vet center on Howard Street. And then people go, oh, really? How can I do that? Wow, we got to know our community. We trained our welcomers. Now, when I served the congregation in San Antonio, we had five bases around the church, so it was really easy to identify the service members. They had the right haircut. They were very respectful. They had kids that were kind of bouncing up and down, very used to being integrated into new communities. In Evanston, it's a little harder, but so we have a book of Bless All Who Serve things on the welcome table. And we have our volunteers that are trained right there to notice who's noticing the books. What's this? Oh, have you served? Or do you have a family member who's serving? Oh, yeah. And those are actually gifts for people who are serving. We made a brochure. So we got the rack in the lobby of, what UU Buddhists, UU Christians, UU military now. Very simple steps. My congregation is like really ambitious, and they wanted to do 10,000 things, And we came, you know, we decided to like, well, let's start with a few simple things. Throw the book out, throw a brochure up on the thing, and see what happens. So I encourage you to do the Hostess Military Ministry Toolkit and you know, see what happens. See what comes to the surface, because I guarantee it's going to be worth the conversations that you have. Thank you. All right, so I'll turn over.
And tell us what happens, too. So I think we're going to take a little bit of a time before Bob's going to talk about the Church of the Larger Fellowship in a few minutes. But we're going to stop now and let you ask any questions you have for Brad or for me or for Lisa or for Bob. And would appreciate if it's possible for you to use the microphone. If it's not, just wave and we'll get it to you.
The reason why we're insisting on the microphone is this is being recorded.
I'm Denny from Fort Walton Beach, from the UU Fellowship, the Emerald Coast, on the Florida Panhandle. Question on our community, our church, has a second hour for religious education of adults and children following the service, and it's really pretty effective. Would this workshop or tool fit into an hour workshop where it's different people type of thing, or is it more towards a concentrated, you know, Sunday night or Monday evening at someone's house work group of interested people?
I'll just say that it's written to be for a consistent group of people, but I just...
Yeah, I think the way I did it was for the same group over the period, because it builds and it builds. But, you know, you look at the materials and see how it might be adapted for your congregation.
One for that and then maybe one for the general group.
Yeah.
Julie John Knott, Accutink Unitarian Universalist, Burke, Virginia. And I had a question for Rev Lisa. How did you choose which UU communities to send your survey out to? On because where I am in the Virginia area, I'm inside the Beltway or just outside the Beltway. My congregation is over 90% military or former military. Some served unwillingly, you know, as conscientious objectors in Vietnam. Others are career. And we have currently reservists that are going. And so for us, it feels weird when we come here and it's like, whoa.
So in 2000, was there social media? 2000, we didn't have the tools that we have now. So what I did is I sent it around to different email lists that we had, because then we only had the UUA email lists. And so I sent it to several of those email lists. I asked people to spread it around. Was it a statistically, you know, who knows? But I did not have the resources to do that. So yes, I know that in some of our communities where there had been military, it was very different. But I did have people from across the country. And everyone... You know, it was very consistent that people thought that they were fine, but the rest of my people wouldn't be. And one of the things we know about surveys is that people will often rate themselves higher than where they are, but attribute it to those other people as the ones who have the issues.
I'm Alan Cohn from San Diego, so I don't think I have to give any statistics because the largest employer in the whole region is the U.S. Navy. The one point that I didn't hear here, and I think it's important, and that is engaging the military, the active duty military, is a great help for our demographic. It really is, because they're young adults and they're young families that we really want to attract. And but the real question is that we have now, and we've done the military toolkit 3 times. How do you reach out? How do you publicize? How do you make yourself felt within the military community?
Well, one of you thinks to answer that. Our military chaplains actually serve the largest young adult population and the most racially and class diverse congregations of any of our congregations. So how do you, I mean, part of it is you try to develop relationships with the bases around you, if you have military bases there. You could think about making sure that on your websites, you have information that lets people know that you are military friendly. So you might have welcoming congregation, you could say something about that. You could also work with whatever organizations are in the area, if there's USO branches or whatever, and do a program where you invite military members into your homes for Thanksgiving or other times of the year when they are away. So part of it's mostly about relationship building and making sure that people know that you are open to those kinds of relationships.
And, you know, knowing your local military community is important. For example, we have the Recruit Training Center north of us, and we have a particular outreach ministry where we go on base with trained lay leaders and lead worship for Unitarian Universalists who are being or in basic training. That happened by getting to know, you know, making an appointment with the base chaplain and saying, we're here, we're interested in doing an outreach, what is your need? You know, and that is a very important question. It's not, we want to do this on your base, but, you know, how can we help serve the religious diversity of your service members? And we're here to help you, sir. And often, you know, they love it when people come and say, how can we help you do your job? So that's a good question to go ask the base chaplain at your local military installation.
And it was just whispered in my ear, don't forget about the VA hospitals that are nearby and create relationships with them.
Ed White from Unity Temple in Oak Park, Illinois. Do you have hard copies or is it all online of everything that you said?
It's all online and it's at no charge. But it's a PDF file, which
right.
means you can it's easily printed. Download and print.
And the video as well, just download that as well.
The video is right there, yep.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, I'm Leroy Eggenberger from the Unitarian Congregation of in Stanislaus County, Central California. It's a low population area in terms of veterans. There are no significant military facilities near there. I'm wondering, what ideas do you have about how we might use maybe a portion of the kit in a small congregation of 120 rather than attempting to use the entire kit? And I've been working with vets from Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq for 5 years or so. I know that the vet center is attempting to have a spirituality component in their work. I wonder if you have any ideas about possibly offering them some support through our ministry.
Yeah, let me take the first part and then pass it to Brett. I think I think the kit would work fine with a congregation of 120 because the whole idea is to provide a safe container for people to share their stories, you know, to set a way in which the stories are deep and rich, whether there are six people in the room or 60. And I'm going to pass it over.
And while the mic's being passed, I just want to say anytime I've done this roll call, there is at least 75% of the audience who has either themselves or has had a family member serve. So even though we don't think we're close to this, the connections run deep.
I would just add, in terms of supporting vets in the community, getting outside of the church walls, and, you know, contacting the local vet center, covenant groups are a really powerful way to give vets an opportunity to talk about their experiences in a spiritual framework. And I think Unitarian Universalists are particularly good at this because of our celebration of theological diversity. So folks can come in, sit with a trained lay leader or your minister and have conversations where they're not getting proselytized to, but where they're talking about the spiritual components of their service. You know, I think military service is deeply spiritual. People are often motivated by that, their idealism. So it's actually pretty easy to have that conversation. And I also want to add, for folks who maybe have congregations that cover large areas, I've participated in the ministry toolkit online, doing that work online, and it's successful. I've done it successfully. So if folks want to talk more about that, see me afterwards too.
I think this is, I just want to say one thing, that if you had 10 people do this workshop and none of had served in the military, I guarantee you all have relationships with the military, whether it's ambivalence, whether it's reaction against, reaction to, willfulness. So the toolkit works with any level of those stories. It doesn't have to be that you served or father served or your mother served. We all come with stories, and that's where the toolkit begins from, is you and your community and your church and your experience. So I think it appeals to a lot, on a lot of different levels.
So we're just going to have time for these three questions. So you can ask your other questions or make comments after the workshop, but these three.
I'm Daniel Guy, the Rogue Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Ashland. I live in Medford. The fellowship tries to serve a wider than just the city of Ashland. I am a service member, primarily reserve, of about 15 years, and no combat, Army Infantry and Army National Guard. And one of the things that concerns me is something that I did not understand while I was serving, but I understand that amongst women who have served in the military, that the suicide rate is far higher than the national average. And I would like to know, as a member of Veterans for Peace and as a member of the UU Fellowship, how we could effectively reach out to these women who are traumatized but really don't want to discuss publicly, at least, or with people that they're not sure that they can trust, these issues.
I'm willing to talk about it a little bit, but I think you can say something.
I think the way is to, first of all, help people know that your congregation is open to people with military experience. That's the first thing, that they are welcome. Then you might want to look at how are we doing suicide prevention for anyone who is done. And if this is your calling, your congregation's calling, you then make sure that you develop the resources so that you're actually providing them with deep quality information or referral. But it has to be, first, you begin with making sure that your congregation has done the work to truly be welcoming, and then you make sure that you publicize that in a variety of ways.
Answer just popped into my head, which is the most obvious. And our military chaplains, the chaplains serving in uniform, are the first line of addressing this. In fact, I just got a new job. I'm the deputy wing chaplain for Illinois, and part of my new portfolio was suicide prevention. So I'm like, wait, I do have something to say about this. And, having chaplains, and our Unitarian Universalist chaplains in uniform are often, I mean, they're just excellent and outstanding in their role because of the multi-faith work we do and are trained in. And the way we approach our work, people do come and get the services they need. They are available to them. Our chaplains are trained in suicide prevention, and so it's something that's very important. I know across the military, in sexual assault issues, suicide prevention, but our military chaplains are excellent resources for the men and women in ranks.
Just very quickly, too, I think it's really important that we name it, which is that military sexual trauma, MST, military sexual trauma is a real thing. And if folks aren't familiar with it and they want to start having these conversations, this is part of the self-education that's required. There's an excellent documentary called The Invisible War. Now, elements of that are out of date. Some of the things they talk about have actually been attended to, but it's an excellent place to start to understand the scale and scope of the problem. So thank you very much for raising that.
Ralph Wyman from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I was thinking about, in our region, there's not a significant military presence, but we have the University of Minnesota and several other colleges. I'm wondering about outreach to the spiritual diversity of ROTC candidates. Is that addressed? Or do you have comments about that?
The comment I want to make is you never do outreach to a community until you've done your work at home first. But then you could. It's all about that relationship building. And in the military, as well as in the police departments, they will be on guard, because there have been many people who've wanted to be helpful, which means we want you to change and not be who you are. And so part of it is really that deep friendship relationship where you show yourselves to be trustworthy and honorable, and that you have done the internal work to make your congregations. Same thing is open, just like we did with LGBT work, that our congregations would say, sure, anybody can come in here, but they hadn't looked at what were their systemic things that kept people feeling as if they didn't belong. And so part of it is doing this toolkit, you know, doing an assessment of yourself and your, and then entering into relationships, which then can become partnerships.
Yeah, and that was actually, I'm Mike Convertino. I'm actually a retired Air Force colonel, been away to all those sandy places, you know, half a dozen times. So I totally understand it. One of the things, and you just brought it up, was, you know, at our church, we have a covenant of right relations. And I didn't see that in your curriculum up there, but I think if you're gonna have parishioners in general that have no direct military association at all, that they have to be prepared to, you know, treat each other well when they have these, especially the third or the fourth part of the discussion where we talk about, where you want to talk about serious moral issues, and make sure people come to it with the right, in the right headspace, because otherwise that's the kind of preparation that I'd hope to see either during, in a microcosm of that training, or in the church in general. Or a re-review of it, because to do that in a really liberal area where I am in Seattle, and attempt to do that without that, I think could be explosive in a couple of different ways.
I agree, and within the plans, if you will, there is definitely covenant work. So,
can I just take a point of personal privilege? Mm-hmm. One of the things that we should have pointed out earlier on, and he's going to be mad at me later, but Brett Lorty has just been chosen as the National Squadron Chaplain of the Year for Civil Air Patrol out of the thousands of units that there are across the country. Thank you, Brett.
Hey, Brett, your iPad's up here. Don't forget that. All right. For folks who can't read this, this is slightly tongue-in-cheek, but also serious, which is, are you highly transient? Are you far from a bricks-and-mortar UU church? Are you spiritually progressive and perhaps feeling isolated because of that? Have we got a church for you? So the Church of the Larger Fellowship wasn't created for intentionally and solely for military members, but it sure serves them well if they're interested. As the UUA's Church Without Walls, we can transcend a lot of the boundaries. We are the portable church that goes where people go. As long as they have either a mailbox or an internet connection, they can come and participate in worship, you know, in liberal, progressive spiritual worship with us. Oop. So, we've got a variety of resources. Brett mentioned Bless All Who Serve, which is our little prayer manual and stories. It's really a powerful tool for a lot of settings, Mine actually, I don't know if you can see, it's all tabbed up because I carried this when I did my chaplain training at the VA hospital in Manhattan, and I have all these tabs. And, you know, when you're in a panic at bedside and you're in doubt, good old Psalm 23 is right here for you. So, but we have a program where we will send these to bases to have them placed at the outsides of the base chapel. So folks know, folks can see it and understand that there are other options. Sometimes the bases will, it'll really feel monochrome about what the religious options are. And so knowing that this is there for folks who have our particular leaning, it can be really helpful and help service members feel much less isolated. We do provide pastoral care to military members and their families. And if you, on our excellent website, you can find ways to access that. We actually have two websites, just to avoid any confusion. We have the Church of the Larger Fellowship website, and then we have questformeaning.org. And that's how you can access the pastoral care piece. Or if you know folks who want to talk about pastoral care. I actually get calls from folks who, I have a sibling who's in the military. She's really struggling right now. Will you take a call with her? And that's what we do. We're more than happy to do that. We have a Facebook page for military and families, and I know that sounds so frivolous, saying we do pastoral care over Facebook. It almost sounds like an oxymoron, but powerful things happen there. And I'm getting way, as someone who spent a year now at the Church of the Larger Fellowship and has another year ahead, I'm beginning to understand that what happens online really is in real life. People have real emotions as a result of what they experience online. And so it's a very effective means of reaching people. So, and if you're, in a far-flung community, like having that place where you can go and be like with people like yourself, it's hugely helpful. And we're going to be, I'm planning for this coming year, an online covenant group for military members, active duty military. So watch for that. And the way the covenant group will work is that we'll have a We'll find our members, find a time that works for folks, and then just meet in one of these online web meeting, like Zoom. We'll probably use Zoom web meeting platforms, and folks will have facilitated conversation and a chance to be together and have these spiritual conversations that we were just talking about that I think a lot of military folks are hungry for. All right. I got too many clickers. So, we have an interesting issue as Unitarian Universalists. There are about 2 million folks who are on active duty and reserves in the military. There are approximately 16 UU chaplains. Can anybody do the math on that? I don't know. I can't. It's too. But there is a lot of ground to cover and very few UU chaplains. And the thing about UU chaplains in the military, we are in a post don't ask, don't tell world, and it's okay to be openly gay in the military now, finally. So, but that means that there are a lot of chaplains who are maybe have great intentions, but their theology will not affirm the full humanity of every member of the service. And they are really in a quandary. So unless you're a United Church of Christ or some of the other other religions that have denominations that are coming into the game, UU chaplains are a safe place for gay members of the military, and it's, but there's not very many of them. So it's a really interesting tension in the military. What we need to do is we need a force multiplier for chaplains, for our UU chaplains, and we're talking about military religious lay leaders. So a military religious lay leader is someone who is not ordained, who's a lay leader, who wants to organize services on their base. And so the way they go about it is they get endorsed by the UUAs. The wonderful Sarah Lammert facilitates that process. And then they go through a base training, and they're designated as a military religious lay leader, and they can organize services on that base, get use of the chapel, maybe get some support, maybe not. I went through this. How many folks here know Captain Reverend Chris Antal? All right. When I was in Kandahar, Afghanistan, I served there as a civilian contractor. I was repairing the X-ray scanners they use at the gates to check people and vehicles for bombs. Well, when I was a contractor in Kandahar, there were 5 UU chaplains in the whole military, maybe just in the army. Only one of them was in Afghanistan, and that one was Chris Antal, who just happened to be in Kandahar trying to start a little UU fellowship. So we got things going. We actually had a group of UUs meeting every, and people who didn't realize they were UUs coming and coming to services. And we had this wonderful community that was an oasis in a very difficult place. And then Chris gave a sermon on Veterans Day about how our country celebrates war but treats its veterans very poorly to a room full of people in uniform and or veterans like myself. Everyone was like, "Preach, brother! I mean, this is our lived reality." I mean, it was a sobering sermon, but it was nothing untrue about it. Unfortunately, his higher ups disagreed, and he got sent home. And before he left, he asked me to be the lay leader of our little burgeoning congregation. And I was like, "No way, dude! I'm like not good enough and not ready." And but when Chris Antal says you have to do this, there's the guy's got gravitas. So I went through this process and became a religious lay leader. And I was so fortunate that Chris had asked everyone who had joined the church to also join the Church of the Larger Fellowship, because I had that affiliation to go to. And I remember, and I emailed with Lorraine before I even knew who Lorraine was, saying, "Hey, I'm trying to figure this thing out. You know, what resources do you have for worship and all that?" And she was very helpful. But what we're going to do this coming year is organize an initiative to be more intentionally helpful to folks who are military lay leaders. So we want to help them, we want to help folks who are thinking about taking that role and help them get through that process. And then once they are actually affirmed as military religious lay leaders, help them out with the usual things like worship resources, pre-recorded homilies, anything they need to help put together services. So I'm getting the time signal. This is going to start up in the fall. My request to you is, if you are a military religious lay leader, have been, or know someone who is or wants to be a military religious lay leader, I want to hear from you. So you can contact me right now. You can contact me through the Church of the Larger Fellowship page. It's really important that we get together so we can get this thing going. All right. Where are we at?
We're going to close with a couple of very short clips from, again, from the video. So you're going to hear from Jeff Pixley and then from Kimberly Sweeney. And then the last one is Kimberly, but there's a whole series of interviews like this in the video.
Yes.
So I think we are going to let Kim have the last word there, except to tell you all thank you so much for being here, and thanks to Brett and Bob and Lisa, but thank you all for being here and being willing to share just a bit of your stories and your questions. And we're here for a few minutes, and I can be reached at the UUA, and that's it. There is one more slide with the emails addresses on it. I forgot that. So there's the Church of the Larger Fellowship, and there's where you find the Military Ministry Toolkit. Okay, thank you.